we inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
Sacred honor is the courage to speak truth, to live out your free speech.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to The Core here on American Family Radio. Walker Wildman here on this edition of the program. The show is hosted each week by myself and Rick Green, and we enjoy being with you each and every day. So good to be with you today. Once again, this is American Family Radio. I'm Walker Wildman, and the show is At the Core. Well, Proverbs chapter 3 is where we are this week. Let's turn our attention to the scripture, and then no guest today. So you've got me for three segments, for better or worse. I hope you like me. We'll be here for the next hour. Proverbs chapter 3. Looking at verses 5 through 7, many of you are familiar, hopefully you are, with the first part of this passage, but then verse 7 is what people may not go on to continue reading. Verse 5, Proverbs chapter 3, trust in the Lord with all your heart and do not lean on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him and he will make your path straight. Do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and turn away from evil. Today, I want to focus on verse 7. Do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and turn away from evil. If you ever hear someone claim to have wisdom, well, you should probably be concerned. I think that's red flag number one. If anyone ever tells you that they have wisdom, you should immediately be very concerned and very questionable. You should be very questioning of this person's motive and claim, because that's not truly a sign of humility. And what I mean by that is, under normal circumstances, wisdom is something observed by others, all right? Wisdom is defined in Scripture, but wisdom is observed by other people. And so, for example, you might say, you know, so-and-so, he's a wise guy. Or so-and-so, you know, he's really wise, or she's really wise. And then you explain why you think so. So wisdom is something that's observed by other people. You know, of course, it needs to line up with the Word of God. It needs to be godly wisdom. But yeah, just that's something I thought when I read that. I thought verse 7 says, do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and turn away from evil. So we don't need to look at ourselves and say, I'm wise, or I'm knowledgeable, or I'm this, or I'm that. That's an immediate red flag, and it gets to someone's motives and their heart. Instead, any compliments, any praise, any encouragement, usually in a healthy situation, needs to come from other people. That's how you know that it's true wisdom, is when other believers can see it in you. So don't be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and turn away from evil. And some of those most wise people that I know actually don't claim to be wise. And if I were to tell them, you know, I think you're a really wise person, they probably would say, yeah, I don't think so, or, you know, I wouldn't think so, but thank you for the compliment, something like that. So humility goes a long way, and that's what Proverbs chapter 3 is talking about there. All right, let's jump into some of the news of the day. I held this story for like weeks, and I just never had time to get to it, but it's a pretty fitting story to cover when it fits in with some of the news items I'd like to cover on the program. Population decline is something that I've talked about extensively on the program, and I'm not the only one to have warned about this. Elon Musk actually talks about this pretty often. He calls it an existential threat, and a threat to civilization, which I don't think that's overstated when you look at the long-term trajectory here. But when you look at the way our culture views children and childbearing and family and marriage, there's a lot of negative connotations and negative kind of propaganda when it comes to the biblical mandate to be fruitful and multiply. And one of the statements that I came across recently, and of course this is not from a believer, this is from a pagan, but it still is indicative of how some of our culture in America views children. Listen to this. This is from the comedian Kathy Griffin. All right, so take it with a grain of salt. But I just want to use this statement to pivot to a larger picture, a larger message and point. So Kathy Griffin put out earlier in February, here's the social media post. Controversial take. It's probably not the most prudent thing for us to continue to have babies at all on this planet. Not talking about anything that should ever be enforced that would prohibit having babies, I just don't see how the planet we have left them is sustainable for them. End quote. That's from comedian Kathy Griffin. But the highlight here is, it's probably not the most prudent thing for us to continue to have babies at all on this planet. All right, so let's break this down. Okay. And mind you, I understand this is coming from a very worldly pagan worldview. Okay. So we can't get too worked up about this. I mean, what do you expect, right? But let's logically play this out. Okay. And this is what people don't do. They don't logically play out their own ideas. And if you do, you start to think, this is really not looking good. But let's play this out. All right. It's probably not the most prudent thing for us to continue having babies at all on this planet. All right. And then the whole motive here and the whole context is, well, climate change and all the problems in the world, and do we really want to bring babies into this world, et cetera, et cetera. All right. So first off, there have been worse times in humanity. All right. There have been worse times in humanity. To think, to live in America and to live in this country in 2025 with the problems that we have and say that it's so bad that we don't need to reproduce as a human race is to totally downplay the difficulties that previous generations and millennia have dealt with, okay? To say that our struggle in 2025 is so great that we should go extinct is to completely downplay all that humanity has dealt with for the last 6,000 years, all right? And we can go through historical example after historical example about some very tragic, brutal, terrible things that humankind has gone through since the dawn of creation, including the flood in which God himself wiped out the entire human race with the exception of one family because of how disgusted he was with man's sin and man's rejection of his authority. Talk about a time where you wouldn't want to be around. But the logical conclusion of these type statements, although they maybe seem to be rooted in something sympathetic and virtuous, they're actually the exact opposite. Because the end result of this thinking is human extinction. And I know that sounds so far out there, and it would via just simple math, right? How long would it take if we stopped having children? Well, if everybody did, it would actually not take that long, right? A couple generations. But there's no caveats here. That's the thing. It's not like, well, I think some people should stop having children, even though that's completely unbiblical in and of itself. But these are like blanket statements, all right? And this should actually strike fear in the heart of everyone. And the Bible does say not to be fearful. So maybe let's say strike concern in the heart of everyone. That people are actually talking about how it's a good idea for people just to straight up stop having children. We're talking about the end of human civilization. We're talking about human extinction. Now, of course, this would never happen, right? But just the fact that people talk like this is just utterly reckless. And I don't know that they have fully thought this out. But let's talk about, since that is a far-fetched, crazy idea, but I did want to put that out there. That's what Kathy Griffin said. It's probably not the most prudent thing for us to continue having babies at all on this planet, is what she said. But let's talk about the implications in the few minutes we have left here. Let's talk about the practical, real-life implications of rapid population decline, of which we're dealing with now in America. All right? I talked on Monday about the financial aspect of this, specifically with Social Security. You have a system that was set up, a program that was set up under the assumption that there would always be, at a minimum, an equal amount of working, probably more, a more working age adults contributing into a program that would help take care of those who are no longer contributing to the program, right? I mean, that's the essence of Social Security. And on paper, it works out, right? On paper, it works out. But one thing that wasn't discussed, or at least wasn't seriously factored in, at least not enough to change the outcome, what happens when our population begins declining? What happens when we don't have the same number of working age adults contributing to the program? Well, you get the concerns that Congress is now talking about. And that is an unsustainable trajectory of the Social Security program. And then you look at the overall economy. Well, our economy, the capitalist economy, it operates under a growth model. This isn't rocket science. Everything about the capitalist system, which is one of the most amazing things that has ever existed when it comes to enabling humanity to work with their hands and flourish and build a lasting legacy and improve the situation of generations and generations and lift a large portion of the world out of poverty. That's what capitalism has done. As much as people try to demonize capitalism, this system, although it has its flaws, has lifted millions and millions and millions, possibly billions of people out of abject poverty around the world. But this system that we have, this economic system that we have in the West, it's built on a growth model. And even some of the communist systems like China, some of the communist, more socialist economies, they're even built on a growth model. Because China's dealing with rapid population decline now because they've had this insane one-child policy for how many decades. They're starting to regret it now because they don't have enough young people to take care of the older generations. All right? So my point in bringing all this up, and we could do a whole show on this. It's a very fascinating topic. My whole point in bringing this up is that when God said, be fruitful and multiply in Genesis, he knew what he was talking about, okay? You can bring me all the PhDs. You can bring me all the fancy titles of people who've been in education for decades. And the end analysis, the end assessment is going to be the same. And that is, God intended for us to be fruitful and multiply. And a growth trajectory, a growth model, was God's idea. This isn't man's idea. This isn't a capitalist idea. This isn't an American ideal. Growth is God's idea, and population growth is not exempted from that. Growth, population growth, is God's idea. We'll be back in a few.
Share-a-thon is a special time to me for reasons beyond funding our ministry. During Share-a-thon, I'm reminded of the vital partnerships we have with listeners around the country. It's encouraging to hear the stories and have so many calls from people who have recognized what a blessing it is to be able to share a Christian perspective and the Word on AFR. God has blessed us with this platform, and we get to use it for the cause of Christ.
Spring Share-a-thon is coming April 8th through 10th, and it's your chance to renew your partnership with American Family Radio.
We deliberately don't receive any government support, so our listeners are essential to the funding and continued operations of this ministry. And in addition to operational capital, Share-a-thon renews the spirits of those of us who work here.
Join us April 8th through 10th for Spring Share-a-thon on American Family Radio.
At the Core podcasts are available at AFR.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome back to The Core here on American Family Radio. Well, continuing our discussion of the very anti-human flourishing ideology that is percolating the American culture today, let's continue to break this down. So I talked last segment about the litany of problems with population decline and people opting out of reproducing and having children. And much of this is a self-centered ideology. It's a self-centered approach. It's not rooted in anything true, virtuous, noble, or biblical. And God's model is the sustainable model. And that's not just because the Bible says so, but you look at the practical implications of rejecting God's plan for being fruitful and multiplying. Well, it leads to a litany of problems, of which we discussed in the last segment, problem after problem. Well, another kind of wing of this ideology, this humanist, secular, godless ideology that puts man first and not God first, is the sexual deviancy agenda, the sexual deviancy ideology, which not only rejects the be fruitful and multiply, but also rejects the male and female in God's image he created them. And so I came across this study today. This is shocking. And I don't know why it's shocking, because didn't we know this? But just continuing to read this and see that these scientific studies are bearing this out, it is shocking. And it should never not be shocking to us, otherwise we become desensitized. But listen to this, and this is dealing with the transgender issue. So if you've got kids listening, you may want to come back and listen later. So this is a rather sensitive topic. I'm going to keep it as appropriate as I can, because it is live radio. But this was a study conducted on men, on boys, that had submitted themselves or been influenced towards these cross-sex hormone treatments. All right. And so let me just read a couple of the highlights from this report, from this study. So this is a new study put out, and I'll publish a link to this study on the show notes over at AFR.net on today's episode, the 26th of March. But listen to this, the headline of the study. 65% of testicles removed from trans-identified males, so these are dudes, okay, after cross-sex hormone treatment showed abnormal cell growth mimicking precancerous conditions, okay? So basically, there are signs, there are indications that the cross-sex hormone treatments could be causing cancerous cell growth in individuals, and in this case, boys, men, depending on their age, that were submitted to these cross-sex hormones, all right? So that's the first highlight from the study that I wanted to point out. The two or three other effects of this cross-sex hormone treatment, according to the study, is the following issues were observed as well. Not only precancerous conditions in the testicles that were removed from these boys, from these men, they also experienced atrophy, which is basically a dissolving of the male part, absent or reduced sperm production, which gets into reproduction ability, and arrested sperm development, which is also affecting sperm development and the ability to reproduce. Those were also observed in men or boys that were submitted to or participated in cross-sex hormone treatments. All right. So now, what do you expect? Is kind of the question that someone should be asking. What do you expect? I mean, you're directly defying the laws of nature. You're directly defying how we are created, how we are designed according to Genesis and according to all of human biology. And so when you're directly countering human natural makeup, what do you expect to happen other than very, very detrimental results? And so there's the initial kind of thought about transgenderism and transgender treatments, and that is that you can't change your gender. You can't change your sex. And my friends, gender and sex are not mutually exclusive. Gender and sex go hand in hand, okay? So to say that we can have sex over here and gender over there and they don't touch each other and they're not related, that is abjectly untrue. Okay. Without sex, you have no gender. Okay. So the entire human concept of gender originates from how God created us in Genesis and how the Bible describes the male and female functions and the male and female traits. All right. But there's the initial truth that men can't become women and women can't become men. And it doesn't matter how many hormones you take or how many surgeries you have, you just can't do it. It's literally impossible. Now, you might can make yourself look like one or the other, but that doesn't mean you are, because I can dress up like anything I want, but that doesn't mean I am. All right? That's the first truth. But the second truth here is the harmful side of it, all right? The harmful side of it is long-term so detrimental and irreversible. This stuff is irreversible. The surgeries and the cross-sex hormones are largely, if not completely, irreversible. And so we're neutering a generation is what we're doing. As a society, I'm talking broadly here. But what is most baffling to me, and maybe this just shows how degraded our medical field has come, what is most baffling to me is that you have medical professionals that have submitted themselves to this. You have medical professionals that have submitted themselves to this wickedness. They have bought into the lie that somehow these surgeries are doing anything virtuous, noble, and true. It's not shocking to me that we have a segment of our population that's confused, that's lost, that is having trouble with their identity. These are not new struggles. What is new, at least in this culture, is that we have people in positions of authority and supposed respect that are endorsing the insanity, all right? It's not as if gender dysphoria has never been a thing, although I think it's probably more widespread than it ever has been because of how insane our culture is. But a lot of these struggles aren't new human struggles. But it is rather new that you have people that are in positions of power and authority that are supposed to be looking out for the best interest of you, the patient, and they are telling our young people that these surgeries, that these treatments are a viable alternative to their struggle. And we have shifted largely away from embracing truth and towards embracing the very lies that got these people in the bad situation that they're in to begin with. The counseling path that used to be dealt with gender dysphoria that was broadly accepted was the fact that gender dysphoria is just that. It's a disorder. It's a dysphoria. And the people that are going through it need to be counseled back towards their natural biological makeup. And the vast majority of them in due time would end up self-correcting, if you will. Once they got through puberty, once they got through their younger years, they would end up getting through whatever season that was of questioning themselves and their identity, and they would fully embrace how God created them. But then comes this wicked sexual deviancy agenda and all the people that are on board with it. And instead of counseling young people back towards their natural God-given biological makeup that they will, that 90-plus percent of them will end up fully embracing in due time, these so-called medical professionals, the doctors, and then this whole lobby of people and money began telling the young people, no, you don't need to embrace how you were created. You don't need to work through these problems in due time. You need to start getting shot up with hormones. And as a matter of fact, we can just put you under the knife and fix this whole thing overnight. Not properly articulating all of the problems associated with that approach. And now we have thousands of people all around the country, who knows the number, and this is going on in Europe too, that have had their lives tragically, permanently altered. And you think a teenager going through gender dysphoria is a problem. You think that's a problem? You look at a 35-year-old female who's had both of her breasts cut off and can't have babies anymore, and let's look at who's really got the problem on the scale of, like, what's worse? The 35-year-old's got it 10 times worse off than a teenager going through a tough season in life, all right? And this is why the truth has to be spoken into these situations, and this is why we produce the In His Image documentary, which I would encourage anyone and everyone who has not watched it to go to inhisimage.movie and watch the entire film. But Christians have to speak the truth into this culture, because, folks, we're the only ones that have the truth. We are the only ones that have the truth. And that is, the truth is that God created us male and female, and God doesn't make mistakes. And any inclination or bent towards anything other than that, the male and female creation, was not how God intended it. And we need to be moving towards a place of truth and how God, embracing how God created us. That is the most viable, best, biblical, scientific, biological path forward. And we've got a long road to go here, because this, unfortunately, this wicked ideology has infected much of American culture. And we've also got to combat the notion that it's compassionate, that it's loving to affirm people in their sin. And this is such a toxic ideology, but it's very rampant. And we've all heard the arguments where if you say anything to the contrary of affirming someone who's homosexual or transgender or anything else, if you say anything to the contrary of affirmation, well, they start to question your motives. They start to question, do you love them? They start to say, you're a bigot. You're a hater. You don't care about people. You just want us to suffer. You're the reason we commit suicide. I mean, people get thrown under the bus immediately. And it doesn't mean that we're saying it didn't even take anything combative or, you know, overtly aggressive. You just say anything that's any semblance of truth to a lot of people that are going through this and that are struggling through this or have fully embraced it. It's not even a struggle anymore. Then we automatically get put on the defense like we're the problem. And so we've got to get back to a place in our country and our culture where we can point people towards the truth without feeling like we're walking on eggshells. And I'll tell you what the most uncompassionate thing to do with sin is to affirm it. Affirming sin, and this does not just have to do with sexual sin, folks. This has to do with every sin. This has to do with adultery, fornication, substance abuse, alcohol abuse, pride, lust. The list goes on. Affirming people, especially believers, in their sin is the most uncompassionate thing you can do. Think about it. Think about if someone came up to you at church and said that they were struggling with alcohol abuse, and instead of counseling them away from the sin and towards the truth and towards restoration, you said, you know what, Bobby? You know what, Johnny? You should just drink more. God bless you. You should just drink more because we're inclusive. We're loving, even though that's perverted. And we just want you to feel good about yourself. No, most normal people would say that's not good. That's wrong. That's uncompassionate. And so we should apply the same standard across the board with all sin in the church.
The most important news ever is proclaimed on the new AFR Easter button. He is risen. Wear the button to remind those who see it that Jesus is alive and interceding for us from heaven. Order your AFR Easter buttons at $15 per 10-pack at resources.afa.net or by calling 877-927-4917. Remember, Resurrection Sunday is April 20th. Order your AFR Easter buttons today at 877-927-4917. As an AFA insider, you're part of a community that stands strong for biblical values and works tirelessly to influence culture and policy with truth. Advancing biblical values and ensuring a stronger, upright America for our families and future generations. AFA Insider, formerly AFA Alert, informs you first about AFA's mission and aiding the church in its task of fulfilling the Great Commission. Sign up to receive AFA Insider emails at afa.net.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Walker Wildman.
Welcome back to the last segment of the program. Well, before we jump back into the content for today's episode, for today's show, I want to remind you of a couple things. First is our AFA Activate Summit, our Activate Summit coming up in June, the 12th. Through the 14th. We would love for you to join us for the first ever Activate Summit 2025. Our theme is Biblical Bedrock, building on the authority of Scripture. And the current pricing is going to end mid-April. So April 18th is when the pricing that we have now is going to end. So, and then registration completely will close soon after that. And so if you want to join us this summer, June 12th through the 14th here in Tupelo, Mississippi at the Cadence Bank Conference Center, we would love for you to join us. We're going to have speakers such as Abraham Hamilton III, Todd Herman, Dr. Alex McFarland, Ed Vitagliano, Dr. Frank Turek, and others will be there at the Activate Summit coming up in June. So we would love for you to join us. If you want to check out more information on that, you can visit activate.afa.net/summit, activate.afa.net/summit. And then secondly and lastly, before we move on to more content, the Boston Spiritual Heritage Tour that we have in the fall in October is three-fourths full. It's over 70% full. So if you want to join us for our first trip, our first ever trip to Boston for a spiritual heritage tour, looking at America's early founding, discovering the Freedom Trail, the John Adams home, the Hancock Clark residence, Plymouth Rock, and much, much more, Lexington Concord. We would love for you to join us in October. So you can go over to wildmangroup.com and check out those dates and information. Wildmangroup.com is that URL. All right. So the I want to play at least a couple clips here. The NPR. So the topic of whether or not the federal government should continue to subsidize NPR is a topic of discussion on the in Washington now. And let me just set this up before we play some clips. The media landscape that we are in today is much different than, let's say, 30 or 50 years ago. Okay, it's with technology and the internet, the media landscape that we are in 2025 is much different. Much different than what was the case, let's say, 30, 40, 50 years ago. And the reason I say that is because that gets into the justification for, let's say, funding NPR, all right, or some of these other media operations. Content, news, and information is more broadly available than it has ever been in human history, all right? So we are not in a informational drought, is my point, all right? And when you talk about the history of NPR and why some of these entities were founded and funded, a lot of it got into ensuring that people had news and information, all right? But my point being is that everybody who wants it has a litany of news and information in 2025. I mean, tell me one person, whether you're upper class, middle class, lower class, that doesn't have access to a smartphone. Very few people don't have access, and much of it is just by choice, which I don't blame them, but they don't have access to a smartphone and thus don't have access to news and information, all right, with thousands of apps out there and the World Wide Web. So the case that we need NPR, or we need to subsidize NPR, rather, because people just don't have news and information. Well, that's just not true. That argument's not going to hold water. All right. So the question of whether or not the federal government should continue to subsidize NPR is a topic of discussion, has been on Capitol Hill. There's been some recent hearings with the NPR CEO. And let's just listen to some of the tweets that the NPR CEO put out in 2020. And tell me if this doesn't make you mad. Clip two.
Failed to do that. Let me ask you, why did you call President Trump a fascist and a deranged racist sociopath in 2020?
Congressman, I appreciate the opportunity to address this. I regret those tweets. I would not tweet them again today. They represented a time where I was reflecting on something that I believe that the president had said rather than who he is. I don't presume that anyone is a racist.
Would you don't believe anyone is a racist?
I don't start by presuming anyone is a racist.
Well, that goes against your woke ideology that you've been submitting yourself to. And I don't care what comes out of her hearing. The federal government doesn't need to be subsidizing NPR. All right. She could have the most glaring testimony, but it's just that. It's a testimony. It's a snippet in time. But the case for funding NPR is as weak as it gets. And I don't think the government needs to be subsidizing any media operation, especially domestic media operation. Because how can you in the First Amendment have the freedom of the press, but then the government is out here with its own press outfit? What? Make that make sense. The government should not be interfering with the First Amendment, the freedom of the press, but we're going to go ahead and subsidize our own media outlet. Okay. So do we have freedom of the press or do we not? Or do we have a government wing of the press or do we not? So the government subsidizing, and it's just not just an NPR thing. This is an everything. In 2025, the federal government subsidizing media operations, it doesn't add up, it doesn't hold water, and it doesn't make sense. And then we can also talk about the wokeness that is at NPR, the sloppiness that is at NPR. I'm talking about the quality of their content. It's a problem, and it makes the issue even more glaring. But my point is, I don't care whether NPR is conservative, liberal, Marxist. It doesn't matter to me. The fundamental argument in favor of funding NPR through federal dollars is so weak. I don't care what their ideology is or what the quality of their reporting is. The fact of the matter is we don't need to be subsidizing NPR. Now, if NPR wants to go raise its own money or charge its own subscriptions or become a nonprofit like AFA is, where we have to raise our own funds every year, then they're free to do that. But the question at hand is, should NPR get my tax dollars in the form of a subsidy? And the answer to that is no. And whether you're liberal, conservative, it doesn't really matter. They just don't need federal dollars. They can raise their own money like every other nonprofit in the world, and they can operate freely that way. Other thing, if you want to know what kind of crazy headlines have been coming out of NPR, one of the congressmen actually went through kind of a running list of just a handful of some of the crazy headlines that NPR has put out. Let's listen to this two-minute clip, clip three.
A few years ago, NPR educated America about, quote, the whole community of genderqueer dinosaur enthusiasts. Do you think that that's an appropriate use of tax dollars?
I was not at NPR at the time, sir.
That's not the question, though. Do you think that that's an appropriate use of our tax dollars?
I think our tax dollars that we use are to be able to provide a wide range of
perspectives. I'll take that as a yes. You do believe that that's appropriate. Your health advisor at NPR also stated in an interview that, quote, fear of fatness is more harmful than actual fat. Would you like to explain how fear of fatness is more harmful than actual fat? That's an editorial at NPR.
I am not familiar with the editorial, and I don't believe that was published during my time here.
It's called Diet Culture is Everywhere. Here's how to fight it. Do you think that that's an appropriate use of taxpayer dollars?
I think any reporting on health is an appropriate use of taxpayer dollars, yes.
And you think that editorializing that fat is not unhealthy is appropriate?
I don't know what that article is, sir, and I'm not familiar with it,
this
so I couldn't say.
This is fake news. Do you think that basic accommodations like doorways or seatbelts represent, quote, latent fat phobia?
I don't have an opinion.
That's also from NPR. Do you think civility is racist?
No, sir.
No. Well, your outlet ran an article entitled, quote, when civility is used as a cudgel against people of color. That was on All Things Considered. Would you like to explain?
Well, I'm not on the editorial side, sir. I'm not familiar with that story.
You talk about how NPR is news. This is editorialization, and I'll read it. For many people of color in the United States, civility isn't so much social lubricant as it is a vehicle for containing them, preventing social mobility, and preserving the status quo. This is garbage. I'll spend all of my time doing everything I can to ensure you guys never get another dollar of taxpayer funding. This is complete garbage. Thank you, Madam Chair.
So this is a topic now on Capitol Hill as funding is discussed and where we spend our money, and it's actually NPR gets several million from the federal government. So that's the latest on that. And that was the NPR CEO. So I think point in, you know, to wrap up this topic, I think that it's not the 1970s anymore. It's not 2000 anymore. We have mass media available at everyone's fingertips, and we have freedom of the press. And so the need, the justification for funding NPR through my tax dollars, it's just not there. It just doesn't hold water. And I think a lot of people would agree with that. Let's move on to one other topic. Speaking of our tax dollars and where the money is being spent, President Trump announced this week that he would be freezing about $120 million thereabouts in federal grants to Planned Parenthood, the largest abortion provider in the country, and other organizations, while it investigates whether the money was used to fund diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts. So this is a very, very good news item. A spokesperson for the Department of Health and Human Services confirmed for reporters Tuesday that the department was reviewing grant recipients to ensure that they were in compliance with President Trump's day one executive order, scrubbing DEI from the federal government, including existing grants. The thing I want to point out here on this topic of Planned Parenthood is something President Trump stated while in a meeting with ambassadors yesterday, I believe. But remember, Planned Parenthood's been involved in many scandals. Of course, the fact that they perform the most abortions more than any other provider in the country is in and of itself scandalous. But also, remember the scandal of them selling body parts and selling body organs, the undercover tapes there? President Trump actually hinted at that his administration would look into this scandal of a body part harvesting from Planned Parenthood. Let's listen.
If Planned Parenthood is defunded, would you look into the harvesting of baby organs that they've done throughout the years and maybe go after some criminal prosecution on that?
Well, I think you're talking about a subject that is a heated subject. And we'll look into it. We're going to look into everything. But that's certainly a subject that's been debated for a long time, and we will look into it, yeah.
All right, so President Trump said we'll look into it. Now, what that means, we'll just have to see. But I think this is worthy of looking into. I think it's worthy of federal investigation. I think it's worthy of more than just looking into, because this was swept under the rug when it happened. And now, granted, it did get a lot of headlines. It did get a lot of press coverage. But as far as criminal investigations into the harvesting of baby organs by Planned Parenthood and how they were going about that, that needs to be investigated at a federal level, because this is a massive entity, Planned Parenthood. There's a litany of undercover tapes from Planned Parenthood employees and or contractors or representatives that at least have some evidence that of illegality. And there's major questions about how they operate. Not to mention the pure fact that the American taxpayer is subsidizing the largest abortion provider is shocking to me. It's shocking to me. Because when you look at the voters' view of this, America is very divided. And I'm not going to try to claim that, you know, the vast majority of Americans are staunchly pro-life. I just don't. Unfortunately, that's not the case. But at a minimum, you can agree, looking at the data, at the stats, that abortion is a very disputed, very divided issue in our country. And so with that being the case, the last thing we need to be doing is subsidizing Planned Parenthood, paying Planned Parenthood's light bill while they're doing abortions in the other room, are subsidizing every single step of the procedure up to the abortion. Oh, but we're not paying for the abortion. We don't need to be subsidizing Planned Parenthood. That's a fact. And there's 10 reasons why, with them being the number one abortion provider, is of course reason number one. So kudos to President Trump on this, but it needs to be permanent. It doesn't need to be temporary. This needs to be permanent. See you next time.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
Faith, family, freedom. American Family Radio.